of publications, including the Manchester Guardian and Internet World. He's the author of 30-some books, including The Complete Idiot's Guide to the Internet and Using Netscape Communicator 4. Peter Kent's new book, Poor Richard's Website, is published by Top Floor Publishing. Toll-free 1-800-222-WILL in Champaign-Urbana, 333-WILL. Peter Kent, good afternoon. Welcome.
Good afternoon. Thank you.
Sure. What kind of things can a website do for me?
What can it do for you? Well, the obvious thing is you can build this billboard on the information superhighway. That's what we hear about all the time.
Right.
Unfortunately, it's all nonsense. A website isn't a billboard. People don't see it as they drive by. And actually, a website should be able to do much more than that. You know, by a billboard, I mean just a page with information that just kind of sits there. But a website can do a lot more. It can take orders, of course. It should be a way to interact with people coming to your site. So, for instance, at my site, people can give me their email address to sign up for a free newsletter. And that's probably the very simplest and most basic thing that most sites should be doing. They should be trying to grab some basic information from visitors.
Hmm. Now, who might want to have a website? Does everybody need a website?
I don't think everybody does. I mean, my father doesn't want one. I don't think he really needs one. But obviously, millions of people want them. Probably a lot of those people don't need them. There are millions of people want them.
Yeah.
Small businesses, obviously, clubs and associations, churches. A lot of people just use them as a hobby, just to fool around with.
Yeah. I also understand it's something that families do on a rainy afternoon, on a weekend afternoon.
My family does. I'd rather go out skiing or hiking, but a lot of families do. They use it for the family hobby, as it were.
Uh-huh.
For instance, you'll find a lot of families setting up rocketry websites, people who are into shooting up model rockets will set up websites.
Mm.
Actually, just about any hobby you can imagine, there are websites on it, and a lot of them run by families.
Mm. What does it cost to create and operate a website?
Well, it can cost next to nothing. I mean, you need your basic internet account. If you have an account through AOL or through CompuServe or through any small internet service provider, they will give you some web space, probably 5 or 10 megabytes. And you can find free or very low-cost tools to create web pages. So it doesn't have to cost a lot. If you want to set up a real website, and this is my major concern, this is what Poor Richard's website is about. If you want to set up a website that actually does something, that serves a true purpose, that will work effectively and efficiently, then you're going to start spending some money. But again, it doesn't have to be a huge amount of money. It could be somewhere around $10 to $40 a month.
Hmm. And you can get an efficient, good-looking, and I guess efficient is the key word, but useful and efficient website for that kind of money.
Yeah, absolutely. My website is $35 a month. Well, here are the costs. The first thing is a domain name. That's basically the main part of your address, your URL. So, for instance, to come to my website, people just type in poorrichard.com. That's my domain name. That now costs $70 for 2 years, and then it's $35 a year after that. So, you know, we're not talking about a lot of money there. You need to host the website. If you have your own domain name, then you have to use a web hosting company. You can't just use your America Online personal pages and use that domain name there. You have to have it hosted. But that can be as little as $9, $9, $10, $20. I spend $35. You know, if you go too cheap, you miss out on some of the services. So I'm spending $35. A good HTML authoring program, a program that will create web pages for you, will be around $100. You know, spread that over a couple of years. It doesn't come to a lot. So we're not talking about huge sums of money. Once you start adding utilities, you may end up spending more money. Sometimes these utilities are free. You can get a free chat room for your website, for instance. There's a website called TalkCity.com. They'll give you a free chat room. A lot of things can be done very cheaply, even free in some cases.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't have to blow a lot of money on it.
Yeah. I liked the little anecdote you tell in Poor Richard's website of a big company coming to a system administrator and saying, if we give you $500,000, could you set up a website for us?
Yeah.
And
She told me about that, and she was laughing when she said it. You know, $500,000. I wish somebody would come to me and offer me $500,000 to set up a website. A lot of people have no idea how much it should cost. Things are changing a bit.
Yeah.
Before I wrote this book, I think I first had the idea early in 95, and I just read an article in, I think it was PC Computing, where it gave costs of websites, and it said a low-cost website, this is the cheap option they gave, you should allow $16,000 a year. I mean, completely insane. I don't know where they came up with that number. I knew at the time you could set up websites for free because I was doing it. It just didn't make sense. And so a lot of people don't realize how cheaply this stuff can be created.
Well, did the system administrator take the job?
I can't remember the full details.
Yeah.
I don't know. I never heard the end of the story. I believe it was from a large telecommunications company. Oh, yes, it was US West. That's right.
Yeah.
I don't even know if she's still there. Obviously, they did set up a website, and they've spent a lot of money on it, probably more than they needed to.
Yeah. You know, you mentioned earlier that, you know, on AOL and I forget the other system that you mentioned, you can get a website. They'll give you space, 5 to 10 megabytes. How much space do you need?
You don't need anything like that. And, in fact, a local service provider told me, I had asked him, you know, how can you afford to give 10 megabytes to everybody?
Right.
And he said, well, because only 2% of them use it. And so just 2% of that space is used. Even if you use any of the space, you probably only end up using, I don't know, 50K or 100K. So when you start putting pictures up there, of course, it can get large. You can fill it up.
Mm.
But that's one of the problems with the web, actually. You don't need pictures. People think you have to make your website cool and attractive and beautiful and so on, or it won't work. I don't agree with that. I don't believe a website has to be cool. I think it has to be useful. And if you come at it from that perspective, how do I make this website useful?
Mm-hmm.
Then you see that you don't need to stack it full of pictures and animations and things.
Yeah. Now, what do you want to keep in mind in terms of building a useful website?
Well, I tell people there are two things to creating a successful website. The first thing is give people a reason to come to your website, and the second thing is let them know there's a reason to come to your website. I think most websites are being set up without any real clear idea of why they're being set up, what they're for. Or actually, the idea generally is, you know, people think of it from their perspective. They think, well, we'll set up a website so we can sell a product. We'll set up a website so we can promote a product or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But they should be looking at it from the other perspective. Why would people come to your website? What makes them want to come to your site? And if people start looking at it from that side, then I think things will change a lot because they'll realize they have to change those websites to make them truly useful to the other person. I mean, it's no good just being useful to you. It has to be useful to your visitors.
How can you cut down on the time it takes a user's computer to load your website?
Well, then we come back to this whole thing about pictures. I mean, the main problem is pictures. And probably 90% of the pictures on the internet shouldn't be there, don't need to be there. One thing I find really frustrating is you go to a website, usually sort of a medium to big company, and you'll wait and wait and wait while the picture loads, and then you'll see it's the company logo. Have you ever had this happen? It's the company logo, and then all you have to do is click on the logo to get into the website. You know, I find that kind of insulting. Why did they make me sit here and wait for that to download? People need to think more about why the pictures are on the page.
Yeah.
You know, people have had this idea that you have to have pictures because you have to make your website beautiful, you have to make it cool, therefore you have to have pictures, therefore we'll put pictures on there.
Yeah.
But you shouldn't be thinking that way. You should be thinking, what purpose does this picture serve?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, a few little things here and there is fine, just to, you know, just to break the break up the text and so on. You want to do that, of course, but when you start talking about big pictures, you need to need to consider why the picture's there and if it's really doing any good to anybody.
Yeah. So what do you think about audio?
Audio. I guess there are purposes for it. I think in the main it's overused. It's unnecessary. Most websites don't use audio. You know, a couple of years ago I had to do some work on a legal case. I can't say which it was, but I had to write a report talking about the number of sites that were using audio on the web. And a tiny fraction, you know, I did some research, a tiny, tiny fraction have audio. And most of them probably shouldn't. Well, here's one good use for audio. The CD Now website. CD Now sell music CDs.
Mm-hmm.
If you go to their site, you'll find 250,000 music clips. You can listen to you know, hundreds of thousands of different clips. But they don't play any music when you arrive at their site. You know, a lot of sites, you'll arrive and they start playing music immediately. CD Now don't, because they know there's no point. If you want the music, it's there. If you want to hear it, it's there. And so it's the same as with pictures. Consider why you're putting the audio there. Is it serving a purpose? If not, cut it out or make it optional.
So the Internet is not a multimedia system.
Well, it isn't. And a lot of people want it to be. But if you're sitting there with a 14.4 or a 28.8 modem and all this information is coming across the phone line, then no, it's not a multimedia system. A few years ago, Microsoft had specifications for what they call the true multimedia PC. And the Internet doesn't fit those criteria, simply because it's too slow getting data across the Internet. Multimedia does not work well on the Internet, and it won't for a number of years, until we're all sitting there with fast connections and all the servers are fast and all the backbones are able to handle all the traffic. Then it's not a multimedia system. And if you try and treat it like a multimedia system, you're going to make some big mistakes, waste a lot of money.
Are there websites that you would recommend we take a look at that are really do their job very well?
Well, I think the CD Now site does. Mm-hmm. Now, I should say I'm writing a book about CD Now. I'm writing a book with the CD Now owners. But this is a very successful business. Last year, they grossed $16 million. In the last quarter, they grossed $10 million, and will probably gross $60 million this year. This site actually works. And if you go and look at that site, you'll find that it's fairly basic. They're not trying to win any awards for graphic design. In fact, I discussed this with the website manager at CD Now, and he said, you know, my designers would love to win awards. We just read a review in which the site had been panned for not being cool enough. He said, well, you know, my designers would love to win awards. They'd love to win these, you know, graphic design awards, but that's not what this site is about. This site is about making it easy for people to come and learn about music and order music. And if you take a good look at the CD Now site, it's cdnow.com. You'll find that it loads reasonably quickly. You can navigate through it reasonably quickly. They're not throwing stuff at you. They're not throwing sound at you. They're not throwing video at you. There are a few pictures here and there. But it all works quite well. They want it to load reasonably quickly, and they want it to do a job. They're not trying to impress you with how cool they are. They're trying to make it work. And in fact, CD Now, the whole principle behind CD Now was to build a better music store. That was the founders, Jason and Matthew Olin, that was their idea. Even before the Internet, they'd been thinking about this. And so that's the guiding principle. Not is it cool, but does this in some way make this a better music store?
And a website or two that are great examples of what not to do?
Oh, yeah. The one I love is Coca-Cola.
Really?
The Coca-Cola site is awful. Now, Jason Olin, one of the founders of CD Now, he says that every company can use a website. There has to be some kind of purpose. It's just a matter of trying to figure out what the use is of that website. Well, Coca-Cola obviously haven't figured it out yet. They don't know why they have a website. And they just changed it recently. It's not quite the same as the picture I have in my book. But it still doesn't seem to make a lot of sense. They put what amounts to a TV ad on the website. And coming back to this thing, why would anybody visit the website? They're not thinking about giving people a reason to visit their website. They're thinking about, oh, how can we put a TV ad on the web? And so it all seems very, very kind of pointless to me.
What is HTML, and do you need to learn it before you can build a website?
HTML is hypertext markup language, and that's the sort of set of codes. They're codes that tell a browser how to display a page of text. So if you're in a browser and you select the View menu and then select Source or View Source, you'll see a page with all these funky little codes. Inside angled brackets, and those are the codes that are instructions to the browser, and the browser just strips them out and displays the text in the way that the codes have defined. Now, a couple of years ago, if you wanted to create web pages, you had to understand how those codes work. These days, you don't. There are lots of authoring programs that will work basically like word processors. You just type, if you can use a word processor, you can create a web page. You type the text, you select the style, you select, you know, bold and italic and colors and so on. Then you save the page, and it creates all the codes for you. Now, it is useful to know a little bit of HTML, to know what's going on. You may have to insert something by hand now and again. But you certainly don't need to know 600 pages worth of HTML. You know, you go to your bookstore and find a book on HTML, it's probably going to be 600 or 700 pages thick. You don't need to understand all that. You can do it much more easily using an authoring program.
Do you need, so you don't need, also then you don't need to be able to write programming?
Oh, no, no. Now, and you hear people talk about HTML programming. It's not right. Programming. Never was. It's you might call it coding. There is no logic involved in HTML in the way that a program can make decisions. Basically, with HTML, you create little tags that say this word is italic, this word is bold, this particular line is a heading, and so on. It never was programming, although people like to call it that. There are some programming languages used on the web. There's JavaScript and Java. If you're not a programmer, you shouldn't be using them. They're complicated. JavaScript. I've written a couple of books on JavaScript with my brother, who is a programmer. I'm not. They're complicated things. If you don't know about programming, you're probably wasting your time getting involved in Java. Certainly Java and even JavaScript, which is a sort of simpler version, Java's small brother, as it were. Mm. So no, you don't need to know these things. Certainly not to create basic websites. If you're creating something complicated, you know, CD Now, there's a lot of programming going on behind that website. They're spending millions of dollars a year on programming that site. But for a basic small business website, no, you don't need programming.
What kind of software is useful? What can you get to help you build a website?
Well, to help build a website, we're talking about these authoring programs, mm-hmm. things like FrontPage. There are many programs out there for creating web pages. Once you get into more complicated things, once you want to add utilities, what are the basic utilities? Well, there's the feedback form I mentioned, where somebody can come and leave his email address, click on a button, and it's put in a text file or email to you. Those are created using little scripts, generally what are known as CGI scripts. And again, if you're not a programmer, you may not want to fool around with those. You may be able to modify them if you're maybe if you've created macros in word processors or something before. Maybe you can do that, but they can get a bit complicated. On the other hand, you can usually pay somebody to do one for you fairly cheaply to set up a feedback form. It shouldn't cost more than $25 to $50. If you use Microsoft FrontPage can do it for you for free. It's all built into the program. Mm-hmm. One caveat, that's as long as you're running FrontPage at a site that is set up to work with FrontPage. Other things you may want to add, shopping cart software. That's a little bit complicated. Making the choice is complicated because there are so many options. But there are shopping cart services on the internet. These are companies that will host your shopping cart system. By shopping cart system, I mean a system that will take an order. You know, somebody comes along and they fill in the forms mm-hmm. to place an order, and it does all the calculations and so on. There are services on the internet that will do this for you. There's one service that will do it for free. It's a company called iCat. And they sell very expensive shopping cart software, but they also have a service where small businesses, if they have less than 10 products, or 10 or less, I believe, they will set up a free store for them. And if anybody's interested, it's iCat.com, iCAT.com. There are lots of services like that, and they vary in price, or they vary from free up to a couple of $100 a month. But with these services, you don't have to worry about any kind of programming or installing software. It's all done for you. You just have to fill in some forms saying what the product is and how much it costs and information about shipping and so on.
So why are these guys doing it for free?
Well, they want you to, they hope you'll set up a store, and let's say you've got 8 products and you'll set up a store, and then you'll grow, and eventually you'll want to add, 20 more products or whatever. Uh-huh. Or you'll get a lot of orders. There may be some kind of limit to the number of orders, I'm not sure. But they're hoping that you will then move up to one of their more expensive services or buy their software. That's the idea. The thing is, you can set up services like this fairly cheaply. A company can run these things on a computer, and all it takes, once you've got it running, all it takes is hard disk space and processor time. So some quite sophisticated things can be done fairly cheaply once you've got them up and running. And of course, this company is already selling software. They're already selling the services. So it's not hard for them to add this free service to attract people.
Let's take a call. We've got a caller waiting for us on line 4 in Downs. We're talking this afternoon about creating websites, low-cost websites. Our guest is Peter Kent. He's the author of Poor Richard's Website, Geek Free Common Sense Advice on Building a Low-Cost Website. This is the Afternoon Magazine. I'm Celeste Quinn. Our caller this afternoon, our first caller on line 4 in Downs. Hi.
Hi. I have a question that you may just have sort of answered. After my son came home from his first or second semester of college, he was complaining, sitting around with friends complaining about how you get ripped off buying and selling used books because the bookstores give you very little for them and then sell them at a fairly high price. And I said, what you need is a website, you know, for the university where people can just go and say, I've got these books, and somebody else goes and says, I want these books. And you essentially trade books, or, you know, then it becomes a private deal. You know, you have to contact this person. Is that feasible at all?
Oh, absolutely. That's a great idea.
Are there places that are doing it?
Yeah, there are. I know one service. There's a website called Studio B, studiob.com, and it's run by an agency that sells books to computer book publishers. It sells authors, basically. It's a literary agency. I hate to use the term literary in association with computer books, but that's what they're called. Studio B has a page for authors to share books, to swap books. You know, when I write a book for a publisher, they'll send me 20 or 30 copies, mm-hmm. and I never get rid of them all. So the idea is you go up there and you swap books. Yeah, that can be done, and it's fairly simple to do it. It could be set up very easily using basic off-the-shelf software that is free or very low cost. And I think it's a great idea for a university. That's the nice thing about the web. All these ideas come out of nowhere. You can't imagine what somebody's going to think of next. That there are so many things that can be done on the web that we just haven't thought of yet.
So it would be possible for people to actually, you know, to post their own information. That was what sort of was the hang-up as we were thinking about it.
It would be very easy. Now, for instance, Microsoft Front Page has a, I think it's called a discussion wizard. You run this little utility and it asks you various questions and it sets up a discussion group. A discussion group meaning a place on the web where you can post messages.
Right.
So that would be one way to do it. Yeah. You just post the message saying I've got such and such a book for sale and leaving your email address and maybe somebody else can post directly or can email you directly.
Right.
So yeah, it would be very, very easy to set up.
Good. Okay, thank you.
Thanks for your call. Other calls are welcome. If you're listening in the Champaign-Urbana area, the number is 333-9455. You can also call us toll-free if you're outside Champaign-Urbana. The toll-free number, 1-800-222-9455. Once you've got a website up and running, how do you promote it? How do you get people to know that it's out there and it's a place that they should go to?
Well, the obvious answer is you register it with the search engines. Unfortunately, the obvious answer is only part right. The search engines, now by search engines, I mean the places on the web where you go and enter a keyword and it'll you know, give you a list of links to websites. You should register with them, but you really can't rely on them to bring you traffic for a few reasons. First, probably the most popular search engine is Yahoo. They claim that more searches are done through Yahoo than all other search sites combined. But it's very difficult to get your site registered with Yahoo. It may take months to get listed. They may never take you. You may have to try several times. And if you don't have your own domain name, it's even harder. You know, if you have members.aol.com/whatever your company name is, it's even harder to get listed. Even if you do get listed, there are still problems. If you're in a very busy category, then you know you can't rely on it. There may be hundreds of other websites similar to yours being listed. So you just can't rely on these search sites to bring you traffic. You have to do other things. And that ranges from using the real world, for instance, doing radio shows, putting your URL, your web address, on everything you print, and all your ads, your business card, your letterhead, and so on, your catalogs. again, considering that you have to give people a reason to come to your site,
mm-hmm.
Make sure people know about it. You can do things like go to other websites. Now, this is what I've done with some of my books. Go to another website, which is obviously attracting people, the same sort of people you're interested in attracting, and offer to do some kind of collaboration, some kind of program, give something away. You know, I've gone to these sites and given away books.
Mm-hmm.
I'll say, let's have a drawing. And for a month or so, people come into the site and they can register to win a book. You can register to win awards. I was selected as one of USA Today's hot sites, and that really pushed some business to me. Press releases and articles in magazines. If you can get your website mentioned in a magazine or a newspaper, it'll push traffic to you. So you can't rely on the search engines. You have to go out looking for other ways to bring people in.
You mentioned that in order to get registered with a search engine, that you need a domain name. What is a domain name?
I'm not saying you have to have a domain name. You can. Most search engines will take you, even if you don't have your own domain name. Yahoo is less likely to take you if you don't have your own domain name. So the domain name is, again, coming back to my website, paulrichard.com.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I could set up a website at AOL, let's say, and the URL, the address that people would use to get to my site would be something like members.aol.com/paulrichard. But instead, I have my own domain name, and a domain name is something that identifies a computer on the Internet, in effect. And so the domain name is paulrichard.com. If you type paulrichard.com into a browser and press Enter, it'll take you to my website.
Hmm.
So it's best for most small businesses and associations and clubs and so on to have their own domain name. It's not expensive. It's $75 a month. The base fee is $75 a month. They're probably the easiest way to register a .com or .org domain name is through WorldNIC, www.worldnic.com. And they'll charge an extra $10, actually. It's going to be $85 for the first 2 years, but they make it very easy. The other way to do it is go to the Internic main site, which is rs.internic, that's internic.net. If you go in there, you can register it for $75 for the first 2 years, but it's a bit more complicated to do so.
Hmm.
So a domain name isn't expensive, and it's well worth having for most businesses. What is it, 70 cents a week or something?
Hmm. Let's talk with another caller on line one in Champaign. Hi.
Hi. Just follow up on your response to Celeste's last question. How are links established? You know, those sort of referrals from other host sites.
How do you get them to add a link from their site?
Yeah, in other words, to link to you,
Do you mean technically speaking, how to?
Well, no, but how to get yourself introduced to that site so that they would provide that link to your site.
Uh huh. You just ask them.
Oh yeah, I mean it's a direct contact. The search engine people don't set it up.
Oh no. Well, okay. There are two different things we're talking about here. The search engines, you have to register with them.
Right.
You go and you give them your URL. In some cases, you give them more information about information to help them classify it. Some places, like AltaVista, for instance, you just give them the URL, and they send out a little program to look at your site and to index it.
Those links can be very valuable, though, as far as linking to other sites. So how do you get that referral
from who? I'm not sure. Just do it automatically if you're lucky. Then there are other sites, sort of link directories and so on. Other companies, other individuals who perhaps have lists of links to sites they find interesting, well, basically you go to them and ask them.
Yeah.
If it seems that your site fits their directory, if it's the same sort of site as all the other listings there, then there's a good chance they'll list you. So it's just a matter of going to them and asking. Now, well, I say it's just a matter. I mean, it can take time, and to do it a lot, to hit a lot of these, it can take a lot of time and trouble, but...
Are people actually kind of charging for that service?
Sorry?
Do sites actually charge for that service to let you be a link?
Well, I guess in a sense some of them do. If you want to advertise at a site, but usually you're not... People don't usually charge just for a link.
Yeah.
People will charge for a banner ad, you know, for a picture.
Right.
But people don't usually charge just for a link.
Uh-huh. Okay. Thank you.
Thanks for your call this afternoon. Now, that is an interesting question, because often when you visit a site, it'll say, here's some sites that we think you might be interested in.
Mm. Well, and you just ask. You just have to find the person, find the person's email address, email them, and ask if they'll include you, and they quite likely will if you know, your site fits.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. If we were to visit your site, poorrichard.com, what would we find?
Well, near the top, I mean, the site is intended to promote the book, obviously, and I take orders online, but how do I bring people, how do I make it useful?
Mm-hmm.
At the top is a link to free information about setting up a website. So you take that link, and you'll find examples of low-cost utilities, like this free chat room I was talking about. There's an example there, a discussion group, feedback forms, and so on. There are examples of these things. There's a free newsletter. You can sign up to get this. It's every 2 weeks. There are a series of special reports. There's a list of over 70 shopping cart systems, shopping cart programs and services. There's a report on how to get awards for your website and how to even give awards and use it as a way of promoting your website. So, and there's sample chapters in the books and so on.
Right.
So there's a lot of information there. And, you know, most people who come to my site don't buy the book. Obviously, some do. But that's the way, that's the reason I'm giving for people to come to my site, all this free information.
Uh-huh. How do you, though, you do want people to buy the book, obviously.
Sure.
So how do you decide, well, this is enough information, and if they want any more, they have to get the book?
That I don't know. I you just go by feel, I guess.
Yeah.
Generally speaking, I think you can give away a lot more information than people realize. In the past, people have been very wary. They've said, "Oh, you can't put this online, or you'll reduce the value of the product you're trying to sell," and so on. But it seems to work in the opposite way. The more information you provide, the more people will come to it, and the more people are likely to come back to it. The more you will be remembered and mentioned. And, you know, there are even cases of people putting entire books online and seeing an increase in the sales of that book, even though the whole thing is available online. So you can give away a lot of information. You know, I give away 4 chapters out of the book. I can't remember how many I have. What is it, 20 or something? And I have this free newsletter, which includes information that isn't in the book because it's new stuff I'm discovering all the time. And I admit I use that newsletter as a promotional tool. At the bottom of the newsletter, I'll just list like 3 press reviews for the book.
Mm-hmm.
Some of these online newsletters are nothing more than ads. And I've heard people, you know, say to me that this, my newsletter is different because I'm not just pushing something all the time. But I will at the bottom, I'll say, you know, take a look at the book, and this is what other people are saying about it. So I use that to promote it. And I get people who say to me, well, I've been subscribing to your newsletter for a few weeks, and I guess it's time I bought the book.
Well, it's interesting how you've come to be a guest on our program today. Someone passed along an email from you, and then we checked your website, and we thought, well, this looks like...
Well, there you go. That's exactly the thing. The more information you give away, the more that information will spread, assuming it's something that people want to read, something that will in some way help them. The more you give away, the more it spreads. It's, you know, it's a basic promotional tool, I guess. And I don't worry too much about it devaluing the book. I don't think it does. The more, as you say, here I am. So I wouldn't be on this show if you hadn't seen that. So
when it comes to the type of business you're in, you might want to have people come and spend a lot of time with you on your website. But if you're in another kind of business, you might want to move it along and get people in and get them out of there. So with that in mind, what are some of the ideas that you could pass along? Could you give us some tips on how to make it attractive, how to make people want to stay there for a while, or alternately get them to find what they need and, you know, move on?
Yeah. I guess there are two different types of site here. The sort of site where you want to help people get in and get out would be the sort of site where you're providing information, You're not trying to sell them online. You're just trying to. It's another service. For UPS, for instance, you can go to the UPS site and you can look up a package that you've shipped, and they'll tell you, you know, where it is or if it has been delivered and so on. In that case, yeah, they're not trying to sell you. They're just trying to provide you information as quickly and as efficiently as possible.
And then you won't call them.
And then you won't call them, exactly. If they can move, you know, a large proportion of their of these inquiries online, and apparently they have done, a lot of these inquiries are now done online, yeah, they'll be saving time because they don't have to have somebody sitting there answering you, which is quite expensive. It's much, much cheaper to have a computer do it than a real person. So that's a great example of that sort of site. Just get them in and get them out. My site's different. I mean, I'd like people to stay there as long as they can. And in that sort of case, well, you just have to make sure there's something there that makes the people stay.
Mm-hmm.
I think one thing to consider is this, and somebody asked me this at a talk I gave recently. You know, how many people do you have to have visiting your site in order to make a sale? The thing is, on the web, you have to have a lot of visitors. If you're selling a product, you have to have a lot of visitors in order to make a sale. Whereas in the real world, maybe, I don't know what the numbers are in the real world, maybe for every 10 people who walk into Sears, 7 people buy something. I've no idea what the real numbers are. I wouldn't be surprised if it's somewhere around there. On the web, though, it may be very different. It may be for every 100 people who visit your site, one person will buy. CD Now, I did some little calculations on their public figures based on their, you know, the information they publicize about how much they make and how many visitors they have per day, and I figured out that it's probably for every 60 visitors, one person buys. So you have to get a lot of people in, and I think there's a misconception. There's been so much hype about the internet. A lot of people are very optimistic. They set up a website and they think, wow, all I do is register with the search engines, and the traffic will start flowing, and I'll start making sales. And it's more complicated than that. You have to get a lot of traffic, and you have to keep pushing. You have to keep finding ways to bring people in. I mean, it can be done. People are making money, but it's not just a matter of setting up the website and then seeing this huge flood of traffic. It doesn't work that way.
Yeah. Something I think that is very interesting in your book, you talk about the dangers of real-world metaphors. And that is something I think that we've thought, well, if I can make this look like, let's say, a music store, then people will feel comfortable there.
Yeah, it's an awful idea. It doesn't work. Here's the thing. Do you remember Microsoft Bob?
No.
Very few people do. It was a Microsoft product a couple of years ago. Which would turn your desktop into like a room, and there'd be a desk, and there'd be a door, and there'd be lights and things. You know, you click on the light to turn it off. I don't remember the details. Yeah. I only saw it once, but I think there are about a million copies of Bob in a landfill somewhere. It doesn't work. A lot of products have tried this. They try it over and over again, and you see it on the web. I saw one recently. There's an example in the book where you come into a lobby. It's like, in fact, there's a building, and you click on the door to go in the building, and then you enter the lobby, and there's the elevator, and there's some stairs, and you have to, you know, pick which you want. And it wouldn't be so bad if it all loaded quickly, but of course, on the internet, it doesn't. It takes a lot of time to load. So the question is, what does it buy you? And it really doesn't buy you anything much. People understand directories. People have been using the Yellow Pages for decades.
Mm-hmm.
There's no need to try and insulate them in this way and say, okay, click on the book to go to our list of articles, or click on the address book on the desk to find the contact information. It's very confusing. It's often confusing because, you know, you have to look around this room and try and figure out what's what. It would be much easier to have a list saying, click here for contact information, click here for articles, whatever. And so, you know, you can just confuse people and irritate them because they're going to get tired of waiting to see your site, you know, for all these pictures to load.
Mm-hmm.
They don't work. I don't know of a really successful product. So, and we're talking, you know, this is software we're talking about. A website is basically a piece of software, and these real world metaphors have been used for years. They've been tried over and over again, and like Bob, they generally don't work.
Is there a business out there on the net that will come and critique your website and say, hey, here's some mistakes you're making, or here's something you're doing that's really smart?
You know, I haven't run into anybody like that. There are thousands of website designers, of course.
Right.
You can always go to a designer and they'll tell you what they think of your site, which may be wrong, unfortunately.
Hmm.
Here's the thing with designers. Generally speaking, when you talk about a website designer, you're talking about graphic arts. You're talking about a graphical designer. And yet, a website is actually a piece of software. It isn't just a static page that has to look good. It's a piece of software that has to work in some way. Really, a website should be designed by somebody who understands user interface design, how to lead people through something, how to get them to the area you want to get them to efficiently and quickly and, you know, with the least amount of frustration. As I say, too often, website designers are graphic artists, they're graphic designers. And those are very different skills. And so, well, we come back to the CD Now story I told you earlier on. I think it was Internet Week. They had two artists critique the CD Now site, and they, in general, didn't like it because it wasn't cool enough, it wasn't beautiful enough, it wasn't pretty enough. But at CD Now, they're more interested in user interface design. They're more interested in getting people to the information they're after. So these are two very different skills, and you have to be careful. When you're getting advice on a website, you have to be careful about who's giving you the advice. Because, you know, what is it you're trying to achieve? Are you trying to create something really gorgeous, or are you trying to create something that works?
Yeah. We have a regular guest on this Computers and You topic who's with us fairly often, and invariably someone will call and say, I want to get a computer. What should I get? And he says, well, always he says, what do you want to do with it?
Uh-huh.
And I guess it's the same thing with the website.
Yeah, it is. And unfortunately, too many people are trying to create, you know, cool websites. That's what I say. I say, you know, forget cool, think useful.
Hmm.
All depends on your definition of cool, of course. You know, over at CD Now, they define cool as this fantastic amount of information they have. And they think it's really cool the way you can move through their website and get to that information. But cool, typically in the web business, cool means pictures and animation and sounds.
Bells and whistles,
yeah. And, you know, the Internet certainly was early on a giant jobs program for Internet geeks, for computer geeks, you know, and it's a lot of fun, this stuff. To actually get paid to play with these software tools is great, and a lot of people are doing it, but it doesn't create a good website.
Yeah. Well, I want to thank you very much for talking with us this afternoon.
Oh, you're welcome. I've enjoyed it.
Peter Kent has been our guest. His latest book is Poor Richard's Website, Geek-Free Common Sense Advice on Building a Low-Cost Website. The book is published by Top Floor Publishing.